Killers are being radicalized online. Whose responsibility is that? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace Tech, Demystifying the Digital Economy. I'm Molly Wood. The terrorist who killed 49 Muslim worshippers in Christchurch, New Zealand last week seems to be, in many ways, the ultimate example of online radicalization. His emailed manifesto was full of in-jokes and the language of white supremacist communities who gather online and bait people with inflammatory comments, trolling. But researchers and social media experts have warned for years that there is a playbook for turning trolls into terrorists, and that social media can make that both easier and faster. Over the next few days, we'll look in depth at that pattern and what companies can do to intervene. Becca Lewis is a research affiliate at the nonprofit Institute Data and Society. She studies extremism online. And she said part of the process is to convince you that it's all just a joke.
Far-right communities online have for several years now been using humor specifically as a recruitment tool. In fact, a really popular neo-Nazi website a couple of years ago, its style guide got leaked, and the founder of that website explicitly wrote that humor is a recruitment tool because it gives the far-right extremists plausible deniability about their extremist beliefs.
It must make it harder for platforms, right, to sort of scan for this content. It's one thing if it's very, very obvious terrorist content, but this is vague.
Far-right extremists have become really savvy at knowing exactly how to stay within the lines. They're really good at masking things, using dog whistles, phrasing things in ways that obscure the violence behind their ideology.
Can you give us an example of what those sort of dodges might look like?
Yeah, so there's a couple that were really popular during the lead up to the 2016 U.S. presidential election. One of them was the OK hand symbol. The idea was they were trying to troll journalists into saying that this was a white nationalist hand symbol. And the idea was that it wasn't actually a white nationalist hand symbol, but it was something that allowed them to have it both ways, where they had plausible deniability, but still were drawing people into the fold through it.
There really is a playbook, right, for identifying people in these communities and picking them out and radicalizing them over time?
That's absolutely right. A lot of these groups will end up targeting young, disillusioned men who are people who feel like they have been left behind by the system. And these groups can end up providing them a community that feels similar to them. But the problem is then they can start to feed them explanations for, you know, who's to blame for their situation. Then they may be more likely to start placing the blame on, other groups like immigrants from predominantly Islamic countries. And so community and providing community can really quickly shift into more radicalized discourse.
So, I mean, what do we do? How do we, how do businesses and society combat this?
So I don't pretend to have all of the answers, but I think the first step is for the platforms to treat this as the serious issue that it is. Mm-hmm. There was a time when ISIS videos and ISIS content and propaganda was proliferating on all of these platforms, and they actually have been quite successful at tampering down on that content and making it far less accessible and far less of a problem. Platforms really need to prioritize and give resources to white supremacist content as an issue and how to handle that and grapple with that.
Yeah, I mean, you use the example of ISIS content, which seems to have been pretty effectively combated without damaging the business model of these companies, right? Like, should we buy the argument that the business model will inevitably lead to this type of content no matter what?
Well, I think that, you start to get really quickly into political terrain here, but these companies are American companies. And I think that Islamophobia is unfortunately really widespread in our country right now. And so I do think that it's this content has more of an economic impact than ISIS content and ISIS videos, which were necessarily a bit more fringe than the content that you see right now making its way around YouTube that could have potentially started people down these rabbit holes. So I would argue that they kind of have come into this with blanket economic incentives and haven't considered how it will have unintended consequences in other spaces. The attention economy can be really great. You know, when you're driving content based on clicks and views, it can lead people to a lot of engaging, interesting content. But I also don't think it's particularly conducive to kind of messy, longer-term democratic engagement. It's really designed to get people to have an emotional reaction to a story and click on it. Mm. And so I don't know how we grapple with that, because a lot of these platforms, that's the business model that they're based on.
Becca Lewis is a research affiliate at the nonprofit Institute Data and Society. Tomorrow, how online violence steps into the real world. And now for some related links. We'll be talking a lot for the rest of the week about the business question here. We know that social media didn't create terrorism or white supremacy or extremist ideologies, but we also know that these companies can profit off this type of content. We know that the algorithms of these companies tend to prioritize increasingly extreme videos or posts, whether it's dumb stunts on YouTube or conspiracy theories on Facebook or divisive propaganda that can end up reaching billions of people. Our guest, Becca Lewis, wrote an op-ed last fall about how YouTube in particular tends to quickly lead watchers to extremist content with its recommended videos, and that it's actually become part of the influencer economy, where people with big followings find increasingly engaged audiences by broadcasting either more extreme content or collaborating with more extreme creators, until their viewers end up in what Data and Society refers to as an alternate influence network. But the videos generate views, which generate ad dollars for all involved, and researchers say YouTube has been very slow to act. Those links are on our website, marketplacetech.org. And the Washington Post had a story yesterday from YouTube's perspective about how its team was trying to find and remove tens of thousands of videos of the shooting in Christchurch. At one point, YouTube said the video was being uploaded every second. And Facebook said it removed or blocked 1.5 million videos of the violence as well. I'm Molly Wood, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.